You're listening and watching the podcast on Shark Week, and it is my great honor to welcome back to the show Mr. Bruce Hale. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Matt. It's a pleasure to be back.
It is such a great day when I talk to you, Bruce Hale, and I'm so excited for tonight. My wife told me not to ramble because we listen to the old shows and I talk way too much when you were on the show, because I'm very excited to pick your brain, and I'm doing it again right now. So
That's totally fine.
How have you been?
Conversation. I'm real good. Yeah, I'm just having a fairly mellow summer. Just finished the first draft of my next novel, and I'm letting it cool off for a bit, and then I'll, about another week or so, I'll jump back in and start revising.
Okay, let me ask you this. This is a lesser artist to a great artist question here. The cooling off process, do you, when you're done a novel, do you let it sit, how long do you let it sit for before you let it incubate and you go back in to revise it?
Well, if I could, I'd let it sit for a month, 6 weeks.
Okay.
And then when I would come back, it would be a completely strange thing to me, and I'd see it with fresh eyes. But usually I have a deadline I need to meet, so I can't let it that long. So at least 2 weeks, I let it marinate.
Interesting. You let it marinate, and then with the fresh eyes, you say, like, you could look at something and think, okay, I could do this different here, and that would be better kind of situation.
Exactly. Yeah, and I can't always, when I'm in the thick of it, like if I just finished it and then started revising, I can't always see other options or other ways I could go, because it's there on the page. So I think, okay, this is it. Let me just fix the spelling and grammar and stuff. But with more distance, you go, oh, this, there could be a fun bit here. Or what if we complicated the plot a little bit? And so these are all the things that occur to you when you have time away from the story.
Now, because it's July and you're letting it sink, you're letting it sit. Will this be... Uh-huh. I'm guessing here, would this be a holiday season kind of novel, like a Peppermint Post sort of thing, or am I way off base here?
No, not on this one. This is the second book of a two-book series I'm doing with Penguin, and it's a fun concept. One of the editors there came up with the idea, and we had been looking for something to collaborate on, so he finally contacts me and says, I think I've got it. It's the Outer Space Mystery Pizza Club.
I love it. Outer Space Mini Story Pizza Club?
Mystery Pizza Club.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
And unique. I'm sure you're not going to, you can't find that on Google anywhere yet. So it's like,
no, you
own that. That is so cool.
So it's really fun. You know, just, it's to do the Hollywood pitch version, it's Adventures in Babysitting meets Howard the Duck.
Oh, I love it.
You've got aliens, and you've got these kids and their babysitter who go on an adventure on another planet, and all the aliens love pizza, and it's extremely silly.
Oh, that is so cool. That's so exciting. Yeah. Now, which number, how many books have you written so far? It has to be like 500 at this point.
It's up there. Yeah, 502, I think. Yeah.
502. It's so great.
I believe I'm up to 75. Four that have been published.
Wow.
It'll be 75 this fall when my little golden book biography of William Shatner gets published.
The little golden book of William Shatner.
Yeah.
Do you remember as kids the little golden books being so excited to read those? I still have mine somewhere. I think they're in my parents' attic. But there was something so special and tangible about the way they felt and looked in the stories. Like they stay with you, you know, from the mouth of babes, young, impressionable minds. Like, they stick with you forever. They're just so cool.
They do. And they're so short. And you feel, you know, when you're a little kid, you feel a sense of accomplishment. Like, oh, I read this whole book. You know, never mind that it was 30 pages or something, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah, it sticks with you. And I feel like your books, your novels, a lot of them, they not only resonate with children and adults, you know, because anybody can read them, but there's something very nostalgic about them. You know, like if you're reading from the first time, they're very familiar and I've said this before, and it's true. They're very smart with kids because kids are very smart. You know, you can't fool kids, and you're very honest in your writing about that. And you make it a fun but learning kind of adventure for them, which not everybody can do. And that's pretty fantastic.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you picked up on that. I do like to make it work at a couple of different levels. There's some stuff in there just for the adults who are reading the books to the kids. And then, yeah, you got to tell kids the truth because we owe that to them.
Yeah, good point. We do. And looking at your background, you have Clark the Shark books behind you and the Clark the Shark plush toy I see there. What does one have to do to buy one of those? Are those available online? Because I feel like I need that in my life. They are available. Okay. That's what we all need to do. I think I lost you there for a second. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay, cool. So let's talk. It's Shark Week. We know we're all fans of sharks here.
Absolutely.
Can you sort of explain how Clark the Shark came about? Because it's just such a cool, iconic character. What was the genesis of Clark?
Well, the funny thing is most people, especially kids in the schools, they think, oh, I must have created the character, because that's usually what the author does. You create the character, you write the story, you go out and find a publisher who wants to publish it. But in this case, the publisher came to me. I had a working relationship with Harper, and they said, hey, we came up with this fun character and we'd like you to write the book. And Clark the Shark, it was such a no-brainer. I'm like, oh, what a fun name. And coincidentally, my stepdad's name was Clark. So, you know, I had a connection to it.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah. And so when they came to me, it was going to be just a digital I can read book. So it wasn't even going to appear in print form.
Okay. Okay.
And then once they saw the story that I had written and the wonderful illustrations that Guy Francis had done, they're like, no. We need to make this like a full-on picture book, you know. Just
this
like,
deserves the respect of like a real book here.
Exactly. And then they did that, and then it did very well, and they just kept signing up more and more books. And the 12th Clark the Shark book came out last summer.
The 12th Clark the Shark book, and because 13 is such an unlucky number, are we done at 12? Is that like the good
spot? I
think
we're done at 12. You never know in publishing. Like if PBS Kids picks it up as a series, I'm sure we'll do more books. But for now, I think that's it with Clark. We've told a lot of tales with him.
You've told a lot of tales. And I also like when authors, because you have so many endless opportunities and so many projects and different things, I do like it when a certain subject or series or whatever does come full circle. You know, you own it, you have it, it's from beginning to end, here it is. It's not left out there like, well, maybe there's gonna be another one in 5 years and it's not done. It's there, it's complete. Like it's sort of a sense of not only accomplishment, obviously, for writing the books, but you saw it through, I would imagine. Like his journey is complete and it's there forever. Clark's there forever.
Yeah, I like that. And as a series reader myself, I love writing series books. And a lot of kids, especially in what they call the middle grade years, the 8 to 12 year olds, they just eat up series books. So if they read something and they like it, they want the next one. They don't want somebody to tell them, oh, that's the only book there is. You'll have to find something else to read. They're like, no, give me the next book. I want to know what happens next.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember growing up. It was when I was younger, it was Berenstain Bears, which coincidentally I grew up in that area of Stan and Jan Berenstain in Pennsylvania. I actually knew Leo Berenstain, who Brother Bear was based off of, and didn't know that was him until like 5 years into our acquaintanceship. And that blew my mind. And Berenstain Bears and the Goosebumps series when I was a little bit older.
Sure.
And you read one and you were like, I need another one. And sure as heck, like a week or two later, a month later, whatever it was, you get another one. So as a kid from that age, like I get you needed to keep going. You love the series, you know?
Yeah.
It's exciting. And that's, we should encourage that too, because they're reading and you're learning.
Absolutely.
It.
And those are really the peak of the reading years for kids, like that 8 to 12 year old range, because they've done studies and reading tends to fall off as they get into their teens. And like in high school, when they suck all the joy out of literature by making you analyze it instead of just reading something for fun.
Right.
So, you know, so kids get turned off to reading.
Right. Which I feel like that should be kind of embraced more, what you just said. It's a sense of let's not turn them off. So
yeah.
I remember reading The Great Gatsby, and that's like one of my favorite books ever. But when
it's
they were
classic.
Analyzing it so much, I'm like, you know what? Let's just like enjoy it. There's so much here. We can analyze it later because there is things to be analyzed. Let's
Yeah.
just enjoy the book, you know? Stop trying to turn
Exactly.
me off to it. The question that the world wants to know, Bruce, is what do you read? Okay,
Oh,
so like,
man.
are you? I'm so curious. Like, what are you
I read
into?
a wide range of books. I'll read children's books, you know, especially for the middle grade and young adult. And there's some wonderful young adult authors out there. And I also love adult mysteries. I just a little while ago, I read the Thursday Murder Club, which is a really fun series set in a retirement community in Britain.
Oh.
All these over-the-hill people get together and they're solving mysteries amongst their aches and pains, and it's very witty and clever.
The Brits have a good sense of humor and a good sense of wit. When you read a lot of that
They
literature and
do.
even in screenwriting, you're like, okay, I get it. The thespian Shakespearean influence is there. Like, I
Well, you
understand
know,
it.
they invented the language, so they
They
know how
invented it. Take some
to.
liberty. So you kind of you're pretty well balanced in what you read, what you put in your body
Yeah.
in terms of like literature, you know, you kind of poke around.
Absolutely. And I'll read nonfiction, especially biographies. In fact, this one biography I read is awesome. It's called The Black Count, and
Black Count.
it's the story of the father of the guy that wrote The Count of Monte Cristo.
Oh, Victor, not Victor Hugo.
His name is escaping me at the moment.
Dumas.
Dumas, yeah, Alexander
Dumas,
Dumas.
right.
So his dad was born, he was the son of a French plantation owner and a slave born in Haiti in poverty. He was a bastard and he rose to become a general in Napoleon's army.
Oh, wow.
And when you read it, it reads like an adventure novel, and half the stuff that happened to him ended up in his son's books.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah.
What is that called? I'm gonna have to look
It's
out for that.
called The Black Count.
Very cool.
One of the best nonfiction books I've ever read.
Yeah, tell them all about the historical and when you kind of slide in other things, that's
It's
very
fantastic.
interesting.
Yeah.
The last time we spoke, it was just around the pandemic. Pandemic might have been easing up, but it was still there. But since then, the author visits, I'm going by your social media accounts and things I've seen, they're blowing up right now. I mean, they're like,
Oh,
it's
yeah.
huge. Can you tell us what you're doing with these author visits? Like, how much you have to be in so demand right now? You have to be all booked up.
Well, yeah, it was pretty crazy. You know, for that long stretch of the pandemic, there were only a few brave schools here and there that would say, okay, yes, we're willing to have a person come visit us in person in our school
Right.
and not be masked. You know, we'll let him spread his germs all over us. But finally, just this last fall, it got to the point where I guess enough schools felt like they were over the hump and a lot of them weren't masking anymore. And they said, you know what? I think this spring we'd like an in-person visit. And I got contacted by tons of schools. And so
Good.
what I ended up doing between like late February and early June, I was on the road almost constantly, never home for more than a week.
Wow.
And it got to the point where, you know, I'd come back and my wife would go, "You look so familiar. Have we?"
Who are you?
Yeah.
So you were constantly moving around. What's like the farthest you went? Because on a previous show, I remember you went to Africa at one point. That you
Oh,
were,
yeah.
this was like, and this is right before like they closed the borders down kind of thing. Like
Yeah,
you
that
just
was a
got out of
crazy
there.
visit.
I always
Yeah,
remember
that
that
was
being a.
Sudan when the government collapsed and I just barely got out.
You just got out, which is wild. I just watched the movie
Yeah.
Congo recently, and yes, I did say that out loud.
Yes.
Admittedly, I'm
It's
sorry, but
okay.
they shut down the borders and that the government was overthrown. And I that jogged my memory, and I was like, I think Bruce was there, and I was like, it's not a real movie, but he was probably in Africa, and I just remembered that.
Exactly.
But on these recent author visits, are you traveling to the East Coast? Are you traveling all over? Like, where are you headed?
Yeah, this last spring, I went all over the U.S. from California, Texas, South Carolina, Virginia, Detroit.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, I didn't time it right, so I ended up in Detroit in February, so that was a little cold.
Cold, a little cold.
Yeah, but it was great. Yeah, all over the Midwest, and it was so fun. And these kids were just, like, hungry for that kind of stimulation, and
yeah,
they were so welcoming. I mean, gosh, like, one school in South Carolina, the kids all dressed up like my characters.
Oh, no way.
Oh, it was so
cool. Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the whole school read one of my Chet Gecko novels. And
Chet Gecko.
So there were a bunch of Chets and Natalies with, you know, with their little
that is awesome
stuff. It was hilarious.
But you got to feel like $1 million after that. I mean, to write a novel's one thing, and that's fantastic. To write multiple novels is even better. But to write these books, go to schools and have kids dressing up like characters and something of your creation, that's like the highlight of someone's life. I mean, that's incredible. Oh, yeah. I couldn't imagine.
Well, for me, it's really very touching because it shows me that my work is making a difference. And these kids, some of whom are reluctant readers, are embracing books and making them their own, which tells me I'm on the right path.
Yeah, you're doing the right thing. And to have that kind of adulation of kids who might be, like you said, reluctant readers, to be inspired by your books to read. I mean, that's changing lives. That's the definition of it. I mean, what an amazing accomplishment to have done that.
It's pretty cool. And, you know, for me, when I was a kid, I was a reluctant reader. So
really,
becoming a reader made a big difference in my life. So
yeah,
if I can pass that on to kids, you know, that feels like the right thing to do.
It is the right thing to do. Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
On these author visits, what is the format? Do they contact you through the website, which I'll just read it here. It's brucehale.com. Pretty easy to remember.
Yeah.
And they book you, you get hired, and do you, like, what's the format? How long are they? What kind of happens during them?
Well, I offer, like, different visit packages depending on what the school's needs are. The most common one is I'll do 3 presentations for the entire student body. So they'll break them into, like, 2 grade chunks or 3 grade chunks. And I'll tell them my story, how I went from being a reluctant reader to becoming an author. And then from that, I'll draw lessons that they can use in their own lives, whatever they want to be when they grow up. And so, you know, I'll talk about the importance of persistence and not giving up, and tell them that I submitted stories for 8.5 years before I got published.
You know, was it 8.5 years?
It was.
Talk about determination.
Yeah.
You're like a Dr. Seuss without all the weird, dark past going on there.
Exactly. Without all the racist overtones.
Yeah, without all the racist, without all the terrible racism. It's like that. But that's such a good deal, though, to have Bruce Hale do the different presentations. And it's the entire student body. You know, you would have to. You can't just do it for a class at this point. I know you're in the school, everybody's going to come chomping.
Yeah. And it's great. And then sometimes if the school wants to, I'll add on like a writing workshop or a cartooning workshop. Sometimes I'll do faculty training for the teachers, teach them how to be better storytellers, or teach them how to draw and incorporate cartoons into their lessons, you know, different stuff to make learning more fun.
And when they're at that age, though, and to meet, you know, one of their, if not their favorite author, to one of their favorite books, I mean, they're going to remember that forever. I mean, that's inspiring in its own. They'll be talking about that in, you know, 20, 30 years, like that time you came to their school, which is so cool.
Yeah.
Do you still do virtual visits? I see they're on your website as well. The virtual, are those like still happening, or that went away because of the pandemic?
They are. They kind of hit their peak in about 2021, 22, right there, when that was all I was doing. And then since schools have been getting back to in-person visits, they've tapered off quite a bit, but I'm still doing them.
You're still doing them. You're still in demand. Where's your next trip at? Like, what's the next adventure?
Well, the next adventure is going to be just for fun. My wife and I are going to Japan.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah, I lived there for a couple of years back in the 80s,
That's
and
right. You said that.
my wife was actually born there, so we're
Yeah.
gonna go and explore and enjoy ourselves and eat some great food and see some beautiful scenery and enjoy the culture.
What part of the island do you visit? And
We're
I've
gonna
never been there, so me asking that, you could say,
go.
oh, the north side, you know? And I'd be like, yeah, that's
Yeah.
awesome. But I know like the
Exactly.
cities, like Osaka and Kyoto. Is there, I know like the
Yeah.
geography. What part do you go to?
Well, Tokyo is the most common port, and that's where most people fly into. So
Okay.
we'll spend a little time there. Then we're going up to the furthermost north island, which is Hokkaido.
Hokkaido.
And that's, if you've ever seen those pictures of those monkeys sitting in the hot springs with the snow all around, that's where that happens.
Oh, you're going there?
Yeah.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah, so we'll be there. We'll be there before the snow, though. But so we're just going to go explore nature and enjoy that. And then we'll come back down. We're going to Kanazawa, which is south of Tokyo and on the
So
inland sea between Japan and Korea.
you're
And
spending a good chunk of time there.
oh, yeah, we're spending a chunk and just exploring around. And we're going to be close to Kyoto, which, if you've never been, that's a must see when you go to Japan.
I haven't been, and we really want to go. My wife and I, the farthest east we've been, or west, I guess California has been Kauai. So we haven't been to the Far East, and we would love to go there. So you recommend Kyoto to
Oh,
folks.
definitely. Definitely.
When
Yeah. When you guys plan your trip, just let me know and I'll give you some tips.
Oh, thank you. We absolutely will. I'll take you up on that because you know, and you've lived there for a while, so you like get the layout of the land.
Totally.
I want to switch gears real quick. I know we have limited time, but I gotta bring up Super Troop. It's the latest book.
Yes.
How's everything going with Super Troop? Do you see a future? Is there going to be more books in the series as
I think it's just a
feedback?
one-off. It's a
Okay.
standalone book, and I based it on my experiences in Boy Scouts.
You were a
When
Boy Scout?
I was a Boy Scout
Oh,
for about
cool.
3 years, something like that,
Oh, wow.
and so I took a version of that, and it's not actually Boy Scouts; it's Boy Rangers in the book, and I made it extreme. You know, like they have an ex-Marine Scoutmaster who makes
Oh,
new drills and
he's
stuff
really
like
serious.
that. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, the book's been doing well. It's made I think it was on the state reading list for Georgia, and the sales are doing pretty
Congratulations.
well. Yeah, thank you.
Because the cover of the book is the what's the lead character's name? The main character?
Cooper.
Cooper's hanging from a tree and by his massive like backpack, and the kids are kind of
Yes.
walking away like. I'm so curious. Did they leave him? Do they not know? Is Cooper? I'm very curious about Cooper now. It looks really, really interesting.
Well, that's fun. That scene is not actually in the book. That's a great idea the illustrator came up with to sort of, you know, illustrate what the heck's going on in the book. It's got that kind of thing, like
It's got that
people who
vibe.
are poorly prepared going off into the wilderness and having disasters.
Speaking of disasters, we're going to talk about The Flash, the movie this summer. But no, I'm kidding.
No,
Did you see the?
luckily I haven't seen
You know
it.
what? John and I love The Flash. We think it's
Good.
fantastic, and we don't know why it's not doing well. We're like, why is this movie not like $1 billion now? It's crazy. I thought it was great,
It's a mystery.
but I do want to segue. Is when are we going to see some Bruce Hale novel screen adaptations on the screen? Because there's like an Hollywood, there's an endless well of material here. There's billion
Yeah.
dollar ideas. Is this happening, Bruce? Can we make this happen?
Well, there's nothing active at the moment.
Damn
My
it.
Chet Gecko series has come close twice. They got as far as commissioning a script, but ultimately weren't able to make the movie.
Right.
And I've been working on a script for Switched, my novel that came out before Super Troop, where the boy and the dog get into a magical accident and their souls switch bodies.
Like a Freaky Friday kind of thing, but for,
Exactly.
yeah.
Freaky Friday, but with a dog.
That's cool. And
Yeah. So,
terrifying, but
oh
in a
yeah.
cool way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's one of my favorite stories I've written. And so I'm working on an adaptation of that. And I also think Chet Gecko would make an excellent animated series, as would Clark Gishard. So
Yeah.
I'm just going to, you know, keep pushing my connections and see what happens out there.
And I think it will. I think there's going to be a day, and I'm calling it now, where the well is tapped into, and it's just going to be like its own beast, because you just have so many great books and just so many good ideas and things that you've done, that I think it's kind of inevitable that the universe is going to push that out to the next realm.
Here we go. Yep. From your lips to God's ears.
It's happening. It's happening. Your hat. You're not wearing any hats today. What's the hat situation like with you? Are you done with hats, Bruce? I feel like you're the hat guy.
Not at all.
Just not tonight.
I am the hat guy, but it's too warm in here right now to wear a hat.
Yeah, it's like 108 degrees in California. It's ridiculous. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, but no, I just got a new hat about 2 months ago.
See, you can rock the hats. And when you see you in the hat, you're like, I get it. He's a hat guy. Like, you can... Yeah. You can pull it off.
It's the shape of my face.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's good. It works.
Yeah.
Your band, Mezcal Martini. Am I saying that right? Is it Mezcal or Mezcal?
Well, in Spanish, it's Mezcal.
Mezcal.
Yeah.
Mezcal Martini.
Sí.
When are you performing next? Like, do you have a string of dates or?
Well, yeah, we have a bunch of dates coming up. This is a 9-piece Latin jazz band with like 3 horns and percussionists and 3 vocalists. I mean, we really do it upright. Very danceable music. And
very danceable. I got to just, sorry to interrupt you. I watch a lot of the YouTube videos on it. I'm telling you, when it's in the morning for me and it's like late morning and the coffee's going and you put some of that on and, you know, it's always a nice day here in LA, you get into the groove, man. It's such great music. Like, it just, it's just such a good, fun vibe. And people are always dancing in the videos. It's always, people are never just like standing there. It makes you want to get out of the seat. And I love it. I think you have such a great band, but anyway, go on.
Thank
I'm sorry.
You. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's our purpose. We love that music and we want to share it and get people moving. And so I don't know if you're aware of it, but usually around the first week of August in Santa Barbara, they have this thing called Old Spanish Days or Fiesta.
Old Spanish Days.
Yeah. And so there's lots of parades and, you know, people dress up like the original inhabitants of, you know, the Spanish inhabitants of California. And so our band is in fashion for that stretch. So we've got a bunch of gigs. Next week, we're playing two different parks here in Santa Barbara, Chase Palm Park, which is right on the beach, and Stowe House, which is this historical house in Goleta. And we'll just be playing.
Probably a few hundred years old.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. Yeah. Fiesta. That's the most fun because there's this at De La Guerra Plaza in the heart of downtown Santa Barbara. There's like hundreds and hundreds of people in this plaza, and there you see them at night and they're all dancing and it's just wild.
It's so cool. They're doing their thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to share a clip real quick, Bruce, of the band, if I may.
Sure, please.
This is super, super cool. I don't know if you can hear that.
Oh, yeah.
I love how I'm showing you as if you've never heard this before. I'm like, Bruce, can you hear this band? They're really good. So who are these folks here? You're friends with all these guys and this lady. Are you, what are you doing right now?
That's me right there. Yep.
And you have a percussionist?
That's our congo player, Lorenzo, singing lead on this one. And then the guy in the middle, unfortunately, he passed away earlier this year.
Oh, no, sorry.
But we're keeping the band going in his name. And that's Charlie on sax, and on trumpet, and Michael on trombone. And you can't really see Carl. He's behind there playing keyboards.
Carl is back on the right side?
Yeah,
oh, I see.
He's kind of behind the... off on the left side.
Got it. Okay, right here.
And then there's Victoria there, and she's a female.
Oh, you got a great band there.
Oh, thank you.
I'm sorry about the loss of Jeff, but I like that you're keeping it going in honor of his memory.
Absolutely.
I've wanted to ask you about sharks. It is Shark Week, and you're a shark guy, obviously. Do you feel like society and the perception of sharks has taken a turn for the better, where we're starting to truly understand that they're not going to hurt you, and we're going in the right direction? Or do you think we still have a long way to go? Like, as an educated man, where do you think we are in society?
I think we're making steps in the right direction, but I also think that people still have this visceral reaction, and they think they're going to go into the ocean and a shark is going to attack them. When in reality, they're more likely to get bitten by a human being than by a shark.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're more likely to be killed by a vending machine, which is a true statistic, than a shark. I mean,
yeah, you're hitting it and trying to get that Twix out of there, and then boom.
It falls over. Right. Seriously. Yeah. A Twix or a Clark bar. They're all there. Yeah. But you think we've taken small steps to still go in the right direction.
We have hope. Things like Shark Week help raise awareness, and people understand, oh, sharks are really a vital part of the ocean's ecosystem. They're not deliberately looking for human beings to eat. When they go for a human, it's usually because they mistake them for something else.
Right.
It's like, friends who were surfers back in Hawaii, they'd say, oh yeah, they think we're a turtle because we got the board and then we got these little hands and legs sticking around the sides.
Yeah.
So when you're paddling on the board, they're going, oh, is that a weirdly shaped turtle? Let me take a bite and find out.
Right. And then they find out it's not a turtle and they let go. And
right.
So they do get an unfair rap. And I like that you pronounce it Hawaii, the proper name, because you're an island guy at heart. I feel like you're a man of the islands.
For 18 years. So.
Well, there you go.
I should be able to pronounce it properly by now.
Yeah, absolutely. Final question of the night. What can people do? What do you like most want people to take away from tonight? Do you want them to go buy a book right now? Do you want Mezcal Martini? What's the big thing for Bruce Hale this summer?
I think for me, the big thing is more how they can connect with their own creativity, whether it is enjoying music, making music, telling stories, writing their own stories. I believe that everybody has a story to tell. And if they're inspired by what happened to me and inspired enough to tell their own stories, then I'm doing my job. And it's a good thing. And if they want to buy some of my books in the meantime, that's fabulous too.
You're a beautiful man, Bruce. And that's what we love having you on. And it's always a pleasure. And
it
can't
is.
Say it better than that. So thank you so much. Check out Bruce at StoryGuy1 on Twitter. And of course, visit him on Instagram at Mr. Bruce Hale. And visit brucehale.com. Bruce, it's always a pleasure to have you on, sir. And I want to make more of an effort to connect with you and go see Mezcal Martini and just get more involved in the Bruce Hale world, because that's a ship we all want to jump on, sir.
There you go. Well, happy Shark Week, my friend.
Happy Shark Week to you too, Bruce. Thanks again.
All right. Take care, Matt.
All right. Take care, sir. Sabrosura, muérete negra, estás candela pura, porque bailando.